Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Carvery with Alex Dorr. Thank you so much for jumping into another session here where we carve away the drama from your life, from your day-to-day. This is the podcast where we believe that success, happiness, innovation, creativity, teamwork, all the things we really desire at work, it's our natural state once we carve away the drama. And we're carving away another piece of drama more on a concept that comes out from the training sessions I do. And it came up again just this week. And so I wanted to clarify something that many people that hear our work for the first time, it seems to validate a belief they had, but it's a little bit off track with what we have seen in our work that can help you have even more successful and highly accountable teams. And so the concept in today's episode is all around understanding the difference between high accountability and high performance, or a high accountable mindset, a person in a high state of accountability versus someone that is a high performer. And many people see that those are always the same when we talk about it in our sessions. And I'm here to do a little bit of clarification that that's not always the same. And these little ways that people take our work and go in, it's like, perfect, I'll just work with all of my high performers and reward them and focus on that. And it's just a little bit off track with what we've seen is the best approach given our work in reality-based leadership. So this podcast is all about identifying this difference between high accountability and high performance and really seeing which one's more important when it comes to a low drama workplace that gets incredible results. And so let's dive right into this. Now, this breakdown I've set up actually combines two or three of our models that hopefully I can put in a very succinct way that gives us a better understanding of moving simply beyond being so focused on performance and into this idea of cultivating a high level of accountability in our teams, because it's really the holy grail. It is this mindset that leads to both results and happiness at work. And so when we're focused on performance, that usually just leads to results and sometimes temporary happiness, but not sustainable joy or engagement. And so let's look into this and we'll dive a bit deeper. What you really have to start with is the model that gets people going into this idea that it's all about, I know what you guys are talking about, just reward my high performers. And so I want to start with is our model of just when you look at your teams and how they usually play out when it comes to what you're trying to achieve on a daily basis, because we're always changing and moving in a direction towards innovation or new product launches or figuring out what's next that we can better serve our customers. And so you'll notice as a leader, when you roll something out, or even on your teams, if you're not quite a leader yet, but you're interested in our stuff, when something gets rolled out in your organization, we all start to initially, if it's new, greet it with a little bit of like, I'm not sure. We call it resistance, even if it's not verbally aggressive resistance, but it's just like, ooh, this is new. I don't know if I have the skill set or the approach to be able to handle this. And I'm already pretty busy. So if you add anything else new, it's going to make it harder. So we all fall into what we call resistance. And that is where we see it as a threat. It's we want things like it was in the past because we were comfortable that way. Most of us are there temporarily, could be just for a few seconds, few minutes. And then we move into what we call maintenance or vision, and we all start to congregate at our favorite camp. So there's these three camps that your team will settle in when it comes to each day to day. And resistance is where we all go in our human condition. Then others move into what we call maintenance, this other camp, which is they're just going to play it safe. They're just going to lay low. We're not going to get too overwhelmed. We're just going to kind of hide out in the weeds and wait for the next change or new initiative to come along. Others jump into what we call vision, which is where they see it as an opportunity. They're very present in these moments. They're thinking about the resources we do have, not focused on what we don't have. And this is the three camps that play out. And most people settle in their favorite camps. Not that we're cement and can't move from these camps, but most people settle into their normal areas. It's about 20% that are in this resistance piece, about 60% in this maintenance area, and about 20% in this visionary area. So it's a bell-shaped curve unless you're actively working against it as an organization or as a leader. Now, I always like to ask this question in our sessions is where do you guys as leaders or where does the organization tend to spend most of their time and energy, especially around change initiatives, which by the way, that's whatever is next is usually a change initiative for many of us. And most people look right at that resistance category and they go, oh my gosh, we spend most of our time with those in resistance because oftentimes they're the loudest, not always. And they're usually identifying all the reasons why we shouldn't go that way or why it won't work or why we won't be able to make it happen. And so as an organization, we focus on those in resistance. Our middle group, which is usually about 60% of our team or our organization, they always are watching where the leader's energy is going. And when they see it going with the resistance, we start to see the maintenance people just looking for where the leader's at, go where the love is. And all of a sudden we tip the whole culture towards this resistant mindset. And I'll tie this into performance here shortly. Now in this model, we always open up people's minds by saying, given that this is what happens in human behavior, let's look at the payoff. That if we focus on resistance, our maintenance people follow that love and go towards resistance, what's the payoff? The average leader or organization spends an extra 80 hours a year with someone in a chronic state of resistance on their team. Now, what's the payoff? Usually about a 1% to 3% chance of ever moving that person out of that mindset. And oftentimes I joke that if someone has been in that resistant mindset for a while, so if you picture any change you've rolled out, they're always the one that's like, nope, and let me tell you why it's going to be a disaster, and nope, and let me tell you why we shouldn't do that. If that's been their MO for many years, it would be a breakthrough. It would be so confusing to us if out of nowhere they went, yep, I'm in, and I just see some risks. Let's talk about how. Like, it would be such a mind-blowing moment for us. We'd all be like, what got into Alex? All of a sudden, he's finally said yes to one thing we're doing that's new. And I'd make that joke because usually it takes someone that's in a chronic state of resistance. It takes moments of them rewriting their whole life story or their last 10 years in the workplace to be able to shift from that mindset of resistance. And so, like I said, the average leader spends an extra 80 hours a year with someone in a chronic state of resistance. And the payoff is 1% to 3% chance of moving them out of that mindset. And you can go for that as an organization, but it's usually a colossal waste of resources. So in this model, where's a better place to put our energy? It's with those that have said yes, that would be more in our visionary mindset. We call this working with the willing. And willingness we'll come back to because that is a huge piece to where I'm going with this. Is accountability better? Or is performance better? Which one should we be focusing on? And are they the same? Now, as we work with the willing, our visionaries, the maintenance people do the same thing. They like to go where the love is. So they'll start to creep up with the visionaries. They'll join the cool kids club that we're setting up here of those that are saying yes, they know there's risks, but they're going to talk about how. They're going to use their energy to mitigate those risks to serve our customers. Now, as you work with the willing, instead of with the resistors, what happens is all you need is 46% to tip the scale to have an organization that's better able to capitalize on change or be ready for what's next. And you already have 20%. And that is big news because as you manage your energy better, you start to see where we can have a bigger influence on this entire model here. Now, what happens is as you continue to work with the willing, you show the breakthroughs that are possible when you use a group that's willing, that's visionary, that is usually in a high state of accountability because they're drifting towards that mindset. What starts to happen in an organization is it creates this big divide that usually scares leaders, where if you have these three camps in front of you, you have about 90% that are top box engaged, they're in a visionary mindset, they're talking about how we could. And then you got this other 10% that's feeling more and more displaced because it feels so weird to be in that group of 90%. They're the resistant victim mindset, always thinking that change is bad and there's no way to capitalize on it or why we should change anything. They're always thinking about why are we doing this? We have this big divide. And most people get scared, but the reality is that the same workplace can't please a high accountable, usually visionary mindset, and a low accountable, usually victim mindset at the same time. will always be upsetting one of these groups in our organization. It's our jobs to make sure we're upsetting the right people. And so this is where we actually have the potential to finally differentiate and differentiate for the right reasons. And it's not on where people go, which is performance. It's on who's in a high accountable mindset or not. Accountability is the ultimate differentiator to think of. And this is where I present this model and people say, oh my gosh, you finally gave me the reasoning to only focus on my high performers and any low performers. Basically, that's what I'm going to kick out. That's what I'm going to try and fire. That's what I'm going to, you know, really try and squelch. And that's not what this model is actually saying. It's more towards their level of accountability. And this is the disconnect because I want to bring in a few examples of where performance doesn't always equal accountability, or at least high performance doesn't equal high accountability. Because this happens so often, and recently, it's not as recent now, but I was working with a group of a sales team, and they were having a little bit of trouble with a couple of their top salespeople, which are high performers. Their top salespeople of the last, 10 years or so, weren't being able to adjust to the new reality. They were very resistant and very in a victim mindset about where the organization was going as far as how they document their sales process. So they had moved to Salesforce.com. And in this new reality, what was required of them was they wanted their teams to commit to using the new system so they could better track the accounts they were working on. They could have transparency about what calls have been made. If a salesperson needed to leave the organization or wanted to leave the organization, they couldn't just take all their leads that they had in their computer or in their Excel spreadsheet or on even in their notepads, which was one of these sales guys, had their notepads that they kept in the middle of their truck that had all their notes from their calls and their people they were selling to. But if they got in one car accident or there was a fire or they just said, I'm keeping my notebook, you would have no information on any of their clients. And so what started to come about in this session we were doing is that, yeah, they were the top salespeople in the old reality. Because in the new reality, there's a whole different look at what a high accountable would be doing in this reality. And a high accountable would be the top salesperson with the new sales system being used, with their documenting on there, with their tracking on there, with everybody's information on there. And this really opened my eyes to, does top performers always lead to the best results? Because what had happened in these situations and also in other groups I've worked with in sales organizations is this person could randomly start threatening the organization with, I'll take all my leads and I'm going to go to the competition. If you don't give me a pay raise or if you don't give me better benefits, I will take all I have for contacts and I will go somewhere else. And so you could then emotionally blackmail the organization by really the only reason being you had all your contacts with you in your head or on paper. But if this was all in the system and we had it all documented, if that happened, it wouldn't be as detrimental because we could just hire another salesperson that could pick up the what was left off of with all the great documentation in Salesforce.com. And so this was a sign of a top performer as far as sales that was actually low in accountability and really using their performance as this way to blackmail us into trying to have us believe they added more value than they actually did. And so in saying that, I got thinking about this disconnect between people that maybe were high performers in the old reality or people that were high performers but came at a very enormous cost to the organization when it came to value and drama. Because you guys know how much we have found that drama or emotional expensiveness is the biggest predictor of your value, is that if you're high drama, it's really going to reduce your value. And so with that being said, this is where I bring in our second model. We talked about those three types of employees, but let's look at this top salesperson example. What we have in our second book is a really breakthrough model to help with this whole idea of performance and making sure we're looking at it clearly. And it is our employee value equation. And where this comes in is most people look at someone's performance like they're really good in IT, you know, they're really good technically, or they're a really good doc, or they're a really good nurse, or they're a really amazing salesperson. And if they're doing great there, they then look a little bit at their potential if they're continuing to improve their skill sets. And then that's it. They're like, well, they're amazing and they're a high performer, so let's pay them more, or let's give them all the benefits and all the love. But what we found in our book, Reality-Based Rules of the Workplace, is that that is not actually the total value of someone's work. It goes beyond that. It is their current performance plus the second component, their future potential, minus their emotional expensiveness. And that emotional expensiveness piece came out in our research to have 3 times the impact of the other two. And so 1 point in drama in that equation takes away 3 times any point in the other ones. So this is where you see that performance is a 1-to-1, emotional expensiveness is a -3-to-1. And this is key because when you look at emotional expensiveness, the first component, the first competency of emotional expensiveness is, are you fluent in personal accountability? And this is where our focus in our trainings is, we want to cultivate high levels of accountability mindsets in our teams, and then we want to reward those that consistently live in a high state of accountability, because our research shows that high accountables know that happiness is a choice. And when you play out the factors of accountability in your mindset, it usually leads to good results. So as we go through that equation, let's look at this top salesperson. Yes, they might be a top salesperson, and that scale on that equation is on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being someone who's not performing very well. Basically, we're probably planning on having them leave the organization in like a couple weeks. A 3 would be someone that is consistently delivering on every single one of their performance objectives. And then a 5 is best in the world at what they do. And the part I want to pause here for a second is, when we look at this top salesperson example, they might be the best salesperson in their region or best salesperson in their organization. But if you compared to our competition, which is actually benchmarking, that would be what it would actually show if they are truly a top performer when it comes to sales. And so often when you look up like that and really expand your perspective, your top people clinically or your top performers, actually when you benchmark, are just average performers. And I was just joking with a group that was looking at this equation in more depth, and they're like, you'll have people that are your top performers and they'll come to you and they're like, well, I did everything you asked. I completed all the projects, or I hit all the sales goals for this year. I deserve a pay raise. And it's like, yes, you did. Thank you so much. And that's why we give you a salary to pay for you if you hit the goals we set out for. Now, if you exceeded expectations or set a record, that would then be a higher look at performance. But that is so often what's not happening. And so a 3 would be delivering on all of your objectives. 5 would be like setting records. It would be exceeding expectations according to our competition and all of those that do what you do. And that is where you got to pause. And most performance is completely inflated, where people are like, I'm a top performer in their own organization, but they don't look at what's possible out there. So they're actually more of just a 3, an average performer. Not always, but quite often. And so performance, you got to get more clear on the number. A lot of us actually are just 3s when we do that. Future potential. This is another key part, which is, are you keeping up with what's next? And as you notice this top performer, if they're not learning the new system, the Salesforce.com, the new system that everything's going to be documented on, so we can get predictive in our analytics, we can track when follow-ups are more necessarily needed. It's like so much more potential there if you learn the system. If you're not learning the system, pretty soon you're going to be behind and it's going to affect your performance. So it sounds like this high performer is not going very well on their future potential. So that would be below average there. And that's 1 being someone not developing, Three is someone consistently developing with what we need in the market. Five is like exceeding expectations, inventing new processes, inventing the future, or really reducing costs in an extreme way with their efficiencies. And so this person wouldn't even be a three, it sounds like, if they're not learning the new system. They would be a two. And so that is like a three and a two, that's a five, minus emotional expensiveness. Now, here's the key. Accountability is a big portion of emotional expensiveness. And so if this person is not bought in to building their skill set in the new system, or they're half-heartedly committed to use the system and to be aligned with the organization, there is so many parts that they're stepping down out of a high state of accountability that would then raise their emotional expensiveness because this part of the equation is inverted. A one in this scale is like low drama. A three is your average amount of drama. People that resist change, they maybe lack accountability. They create a lot of stories that aren't true and they're not aligned to the organization. That's a three. And then a five are these people that are like drama messes. And there's not very many ones or fives out there. Three is average. This person would probably be a four when it comes to that, especially with this low state of accountability. And so that, when you think about this top salesperson, is now, say they're a four, so doing the math here, it's tougher on a podcast, but you guys can write it down where you're at. They're actually a three. Let's maybe give them the benefit of the doubt. They are a four, exceeding expectations as a salesperson performance, but they're only a two in potential, so they're a six, minus that four in emotional expensiveness times three, which is minus 12. Six minus 12, they're a negative six. So because if we just look at performance, they'd be a four out of five. It's like this person's a rock star. When you do the full value, bringing in this accountability piece and our emotional expensiveness, they actually come out a negative six. So are they a top performer? They're not. And with that first model, when people leave our sessions and they're going, yeah, I see what you're saying. I just need to reward my top performers more. What you might be doing is rewarding someone more that's a negative six. And so what we would encourage instead is to get honest with their math using that employee value equation. It's a self-assessment we have that I can link in the description here, but that will wake people up to what's their true employee value they're adding to the organization, a team, or to the customer. And then mostly we usually have to work on raising someone's accountability levels. And I already mentioned accountability, the factors of it, just to review. There's four components to that that I would say as one of the key takeaways to look at instead of just performance. It's this mindset of accountability that will usually lead to better performance. And so I talked about willingness, and the example was the willingness to use the new system, Salesforce.com. And so willingness is that first step. It's called commitment, the willingness to do what it takes to get the results we seek as an organization. And that's legally, ethically, not hurting anyone. Then comes, once you're all in, resilience, which is the ability to stay the course in the face of obstacles and setbacks. And so someone in a high state of accountability commits willingly. They offer up their buy-in and they say, I'm all in, given some of the challenges we probably will run into with lack of time, competing priorities, lack of resources. I'll still be in to do what it takes and try and make it happen. And then once they're truly all in, they'll stay resilient and they will crowdsource and they will come up with multiple ideas to try and overcome any obstacles if they aren't hitting their sales goals. They will really stay the course. And then ownership, they'll be very conversational and okay with that conversation around ownership where they're like, here's my part in it. Here's what I've done that's helped. Here's what I've done that's hindered. And here's my part in the mess. That is a high state of accountability. And then lastly, they will be a continuous learner. They will always keep an open mind and want to learn more tools and skills to do their jobs better. And as you look at that model of this prototypical person we've made up, is that they're not learning the new system, so they're not a continuous learner. They're not bought in, first step of accountability, to learn the system given their current job. And resilience, they have probably zero resilience when they run into obstacles or are asked about why aren't they using this system. And then ownership will be a ton of excuses about why can't we just do it the way I used to do it? I make all these sales. And that is where low accountability will play out in the end, because it will actually soon affect performance as we continue to evolve our offerings and the way we use tech moving forward, especially given that's where it seems most of our businesses are going, to be able to track analytics and make sure people are doing what they say they're doing and just being more efficient as an organization. And so I hope you guys can see where there's a difference between a performer that'd be called a four there and someone we bring in accountability and drama and future potential, they'd actually be a negative six. And that is less fuzzy math about what's the true value of that top performer. And so I wanted to use that information in our research to help course correct when people are like, love this, just going to reward our top performers, going to give them more love. And it's like, no, it's accountability levels. Because in that model as well, you can take an average performer, say they're a two, they're underperforming a bit, their future potential though, even though they're underperforming, they're willing to learn the new system, they're willing to keep learning. They might be a three in future potential, minus, let's say they are higher in accountability. They are, no, they're not as good at sales and they're not getting as many sales. They're newer to that, or they are just not as skilled at that piece, but they are not resisting change. They are all in to learn the new system. They're very resilient to learn the new systems we're going to use. They're high in accountability. They're more of a two when it comes to emotional expensiveness. So they are five minus two times three. They're five minus six. That person that's lower performer is only a negative one right now in the value they're adding in our equation. So the person you're calling a rock star is actually a negative six. The person who they're saying can't sell like me is actually a negative one in total value, because they're still learning and moving forward. And that's a huge difference. The numbers might not currently play out the same, but in the next 3 to 5 years, knowing the capacity for human potential and learning, given that other person's mindset and high state of accountability, more visionary behavior, they will quickly jump that person as they build their confidence in selling. And so that is what I want you guys to think about. When is performance the holy grail, or is a high state of accountability? And the key we have found is it's a high state of accountability and those four factors I just mentioned. Because other examples that are out there are, we hear this all the time. Someone's like, well, the person, this is an amazing doctor. I mean, they're so clinically brilliant. They're an amazing doc. However, this term in healthcare, but they eat their own young. Meaning they're an amazing doc, but everyone just gets really scared to work with them, or they really blow up on people, or it's like terrifying to be around them. So we always ask, just jokingly, it's like, what's your definition of amazing? And we say, let us do some better math given what you're telling me. Performance, solid, maybe it's exceeding expectations, four. And we just go through that math again. And what people find when we do that equation is the person is a high performer, but comes out a negative number when you bring in accountability and you bring in some of these emotionally expensive topics that are drama. And so this doesn't mean anyone is always drama. It means the big opportunity for these top performers is to wake up to the cost of emotional expensiveness and the cost of righteousness and the cost of trying to be the hero at the end and withhold information. If we can help people see that that's a big part of their value and legacy as well, it can change the whole environment around them and move their performance even to the next level and their value to the next level. We hear it as well. We work a lot in nursing environments where it's like, she is a fabulous nurse, but everyone is scared to talk to her. And it's like, what is your definition of fabulous? Same piece there. And another piece I'd add here about performance is, we can't tell you the number of times we see that someone has been a five for many years in a row, if we're going on a 5-point scale when it comes to performance. So when we first saw that, I was a little naive, because what I think about, I started out my life as an athlete, professional basketball player. And as I came up through that environment, I would notice pretty quickly where when someone was a five, they were like NBA material, like they're best in the world at what they do. And so when I see someone that's a five every single year, I'm like, they must be like changing the world every single year, or being the MVP every single year. And what I realize is that many times we overinflate performance. It's a very skewed metric based on someone's past accomplishments. So maybe 1 year they broke a sales record, or they wrote a New York Times bestselling book, or they got us a grant, or they broke through in a process 1 year and it actually was like a five. Like it was truly exceeding expectations. Well, then the next year they just meet expectations. And so we, in order not to bruise the ego of that person, we're like, yep, you're still a five. And when we ask about it, we're like, why are they still a five? They just completed their tasks for the year. It's like, oh, well, 3 years ago they did this. And that's what's tough about performance. Unless you're truly honest about it, it will always be a little overinflated. And we've seen that, and it's been really researched and shown that oftentimes performance is a very skewed metric. And it's off what performance really is supposed to be defined as, which is, are you currently delivering what the organization needs? And that can oftentimes move that number as well, where people aren't saying clear that, am I every day looking at, am I performing in a way that my organization needs and is asking for? Am I always marrying and measuring those up? And so that is so powerful. Another example is we see these top performers and they get to where they get because they are having breakthroughs and they are really hungry and they are really designing some new processes and things that are helping them break through. And then when we ask them to transfer knowledge or to give that skill set off, some see that as the way they'd give up their advantage. And so they hold onto it too tightly, or they could teach us, but they say it's too complex to teach. So they hold on to it. And then when we're really struggling, or it's about to hit the deadline, or it's this moment where we can't come fix something. It's too complex. They jump in and they get a lot of energy out of being the hero. We call it martyrdom. We call it diving catches at the last minute. And what that actually is high in emotional expensiveness as well. And there'll be places where if we were in a higher state of accountability, we would be in a place where we'd be comfortable transferring our knowledge so we could scale it across the organization and trust that that top performer will find the next breakthrough for us instead of holding us back from their one break. So with that being said, you guys, that was my little riff on this correction. If you've heard our stuff and you're like, I just need to focus on performance and it's all about rewarding your top performers, oftentimes those are connected, but sometimes our top performers can become the most righteous and start judging the judgers. And that's what we got to watch for, where it's actually a high state of accountability, someone that's really reflective at all the time, bypassing their ego. They're ones that aren't judging, they're helping. They're finding one thing they could do to help. And that is what I want us focusing on. And so hopefully this podcast gave you some ideas about bringing in that value equation to help people realize the true math that leads to value and how accountability fits in there as part of emotional expensiveness. So you can always draw that out in front of people and have a great conversation as a coaching technique. And that, again, will be linked below. And performance is still important. My last disclaimer, we need people performing the work, but longer term, it's this accountability piece that is the holy grail that sustains our performance and joy long into the future. So hopefully you guys love that. I appreciate you guys for every single episode you listen to and all the great feedback. Hopefully this is keeping you fed and thinking about your leadership in different ways. And I'm always open to new ideas and topics. You guys are always throwing out some really cool ones. Have a great week. Find me at Alex M. Dorr, D-O-R-R, if you guys want to talk more on social. And we got all these tools on my YouTube channel as well, if you guys are looking at trying to practice the reality-based philosophy with our tools even more. Can't wait for the next episode. You guys know the deal. Let's keep ditching the drama.